Just reading this dedication tonight about a child of some parents who died. I think it was in a car accident, and then the parents were injured, so it seems like they were all together. Although I'm not sure how old Eva was. So this is kind of sad to hear. We hear about this, and might bring up different feelings for different people, especially those who have lost their own children. Or just, you know, feeling for parents. If one has an experience being a parent, then we know what it's like to have parents. So our heart goes out to, you know, hearing a story like that. And we, you know, there can, I think for most people, just feel a sense of wishing well to that child who's, you know, passing on to another world, another life. And then the loss the parents will have to face. One of the things, though, that this brings up for me is, and I don't want to kind of have a talk right now about death and dying, but it's just that sense of, oh, like how quickly I can hear something like that and then think about other people and the sadness of dukkha in life. But then that quickly passes and then it's just back to regular life again, where they're kind of working with whatever's coming up in the mind or not, or just getting distracted, or mostly not keeping that sense of urgency in mind. And my own sense of what's difficult in practice is this very thing that I would guess for most people is present. Like how do we stay urgent in what it is that we're doing? How do we bring that up for ourselves, motivate ourselves, keep that intention up? And this is a good topic, I think, for the winter retreat. So it can be a very exciting endeavor. We're all coming here to partake in a time when the monastery closes down to overnight guests and has a set of residents who are helping serve the monks and the other monastics who are here, but also being part of the retreat and engaging in a retreat themselves. So it's both a retreat in the very traditional way, but then also partly their service that's being offered, which is quite an exceptional adjunct because it can buoy the practice a lot. So some people can find, oh, this is really, when generosity is brought up, then this can really pair quite well with meditation practice, very deep meditation practice. But the tendency, again, can be that we lose focus. We lose kind of our intention sometimes for what it is we're doing, which is to, you know, to understand the Buddhist teachings, to understand suffering and its cause, how we can end that cause and the path to that. So just thinking about, I was realizing this will be my 20th winter retreat in a Ajahn Chah monastery. And yeah, that's 5 years of retreat. And they all have a different flavor. They all have a different feeling, at least for myself. I can't remember that, all of them. But yeah, there's a sense that each one of the retreats came with certain challenges, certain problems, certain things that were being worked out. And they weren't that easy. Some of them were difficult because sometimes the intention waned or distraction was there, or I couldn't figure out how to work with particular hindrances in a way. And so at other times it was very sweet and nice and pleasant, and the mind kind of was able to be more easily worked with and the hindrances weren't so strong or difficult. But for each of us, we have our own karmic tendency, so we're going to have a different time. And that can oscillate throughout the entire retreat. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not so great. Sometimes it's in the middle. A lot of times it's in the middle, sort of. But always we're working with a sense of usually dissatisfaction in some way or another. And so that's also a warning for when things are going well, because we get blinded by that pretty easily, just thinking, oh, wow, this is just having these really enjoyable meditations. And then if it goes on for days, we think, wow, we can take that personally and think, oh, I'm really accomplished here. I've really hit it. I'm become an expert meditator. And then it can crash and we get disappointed. How did this happen? You know, I thought I was doing really well. Or there'll be particular hindrances that come up. I've mentioned before, when I was on a Garka, I had just this weird obsession with just having to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And it just went on and on. And it might sound a little funny, but it was torture. It was just kind of like, how can this end? You know, just walking back and forth, peanut butter and jelly, I can't wait to like, and I didn't have a, you know, obsession with that before the retreat. And I don't have an obsession with that now. So these things, these kind of odd things can come up in the mind. And then we try to work with them. And I think if I was to go back, then I would just say, hey, just relax. It's all right. You know, it's peanut butter and jelly. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. It'll arise and cease like everything else. So we will have our particular vipaka kamma, you know, the results of our past kamma coming up. And it's our choice with how we're going to work with that. But it's also sometimes difficult with seeing how to work with things because we're in the midst of the experience. And I think that some of the retreats that I've had, I've been frustrated with, and I've gone through them, and I'm thinking like by the end of the retreat, there hasn't been that much that's been processed, or I feel like, oh, really, my mind was a mess for some or part or all of the retreat or whatever it was. And then the retreat ends, quote unquote ends. Hopefully you can make your life a retreat, but in the realistic phase, things start to change. And then I say, oh, I was definitely wrong about that. If I feel that, you know, at certain times nothing was happening, or like there wasn't any kind of progress or understanding or slowing down or seeing clearly, because all of a sudden that different mode helps me see that I was in a different state during the retreat, that I wasn't quite able to see it because I was in the midst of it. So when we're battling our defilements, when we're having to deal with particular greed that comes up, you know, some whatever it might be, something that we want, we really want. It could be, as Ajahn Guy was talking about, just a quieter experience, you know, where we didn't hear anybody at all or didn't have to experience woodpeckers. Like, what are you going to do with these woodpeckers all afternoon? I mean, if this just continues as normal and just gonna tap, 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 tap. And what is that? You know, we can kind of get very frustrated with that. But the more we learn to work with it and see like, okay, what else can I do here? You know, this is an experiment. We're going through an experiment. This process of being on retreat is an experiment. So, you know, how can I work with this in a different way? You know, maybe, oh, I didn't think about wishing that woodpecker metta. May they be happy. Not may they be happy somewhere else, but just a genuine wishing of wellness or for ourselves. You know, if we're really stuck in a lot of pain, difficult experiences come up or memories, and we try to figure out like, okay, I feel like I'm just hitting my head against the wall, or I'm trying to get out of a room without a door. And so it's our duty to ourselves to think, okay, like maybe the way that I keep working with something is just not helpful. It's not working right now. So something like we've talked about a asubha practice, and like if there's a lot of desire coming up, then we might want to focus on this traditional working of just exploring what the body is, you know, reciting parts of the body and thinking about what, like our liver or whatever it might be. And then occasionally what happens is people get very angry. They start feeling angry, but they're doing their practice. I'm doing my asubha practice. I'm getting somewhere, but I'm really angry. And so we might think, oh, maybe this isn't going in the right direction. So we try some metta, or we try something that changes it up for ourselves. So in regards to that, something like metta is interesting because there's so many points of access to it. We talk about having a spiritual teacher as an easy way to practicing with metta. If one can't do it with oneself, you find a different way, or if one can't manage with a very difficult person, then you get somebody who's maybe less difficult with you to work with. So you, in terms of wishing that person wellness. And so we're always trying to figure out like what we're investigating. We're not private investigators. We're actually like our own self investigators. We're trying to really see what's going on here with my own particular vipaka, my own, the karma that I have in my life. And so rather than continuing to, you know, like see the world as like hitting a bunch of nails with a hammer, and then it turns out these, they're all screws and you haven't tried like using some other method, it's important to try to see that over the time of retreat. Like, where are we falling into our own personal pitfalls? What's going on for us? Where are we not seeing things? Because we will be in the midst of our own experience, and it's hard to see it. It's very hard to see our own experience. And that is why mindfulness and our practice on the Eightfold Path really aids us in that sight, in that seeing. Because we keep... I was talking earlier this afternoon to someone, and it was like mindfulness kind of folds in on itself, so it like collapses and we lose it. But each time we come back and we just can have this sense of awareness, so we have a sense of watching, and then that kind of, again, it keeps, over time, it just keeps kind of becoming bright and then dimming. And the more bright we can make it, the more bright we can just have this, keeping this sense of mind of watching, of observing, of being aware, then we have the potential to kind of lose that collapse and stay in a state of kind of just continual awareness. But it's not easy. And one of the things that can happen is it just, we can lose, as I was mentioning in the beginning, our intention towards that because of the difficulty that might arise with maintaining ourselves on the Eightfold Path, maintaining our awareness, maintaining our intent towards observation. And so what we're really trying to do is fan a fire inside of ourselves. We're trying to keep the embers of our intention, our interest in our own experience alive. And we're trying to figure out how to do that. And through distraction, sometimes the, you know, that sort of blowing on the embers, that encouraging the fire to stay alive, it dies down or dies away. But it's our duty to remind ourselves to just keep lighting it, to keep trying, to not give up. And so whatever, you know, whatever happens with each of us on retreat, whether we're in having a great experience or not so good experience, it's just important to keep our eye on anicca and kind of that intention that we have, that we're interested no matter what the experience is, whether it's pleasant or it's unpleasant. We still, you know, have that intention to keep watching, to keep seeing, to keep understanding, to keep trying to figure out what is going on, where are we not seeing things clearly or understanding something. And that's where punya can arise, where wisdom can arise. Because we see our own pitfalls, we see where we've made mistakes, and then we have an ability to see like, okay, I'm not going to get stuck there anymore. I'm going to try this other thing. And often that thing that we try is harder because it's maybe it's something we're not used to. We don't have skills in it. We feel like that we're like engaging with something on training wheels again. And we just want to take the training wheels off. We want to kind of just be able to master these things very quickly. But that's just not how it always works. So oftentimes we find ourselves in new territory, especially with the length of time that we're in retreat. One of the things that's very easy to forget on retreat is that there's other people, that there's other people you're living with. So it can kind of like be a funny thing to mention, but it comes up pretty often. It's like we get very blinded and we just forget like there's other people doing their own thing, going through their own thing. And there's other people being kind to us, and it just can, we can close in and not see that and forget that we're actually part of a community. We are influencing each other, and we might not remember that, but it's important to kind of think about all the beautiful ways that you are acting, whether it's just showing up to a puja and, you know, or looking out for somebody else or whatever it might be. It's really, that's really adding to the whole atmosphere that we're living in during this time. And it's in a certain way, it's a sacred ground on this, you know, we're entering into a social sacred ground of being on this retreat together. And it's no small thing to, as I mentioned in the talk a couple nights ago, it's like, it's really a time where we've agreed to just stay here, stick it out, and battle with our chelasis, battle with our defilements. And, you know, it's not like you have to have a victory every day, but you're working with that, and you're working with the fact that other people are here. And so we're wanting to kind of keep that in mind, that we're part of a community as well. And we are all, not just the residents who've come here to serve the retreat, but all of us are aiding each other, and we're like kind of lifting each other up. And that's an important way of kind of bringing to mind the goodness that's going on here, but also like when the mind states do get a bit dark or difficult, then we just kind of keep seeing like, oh, well, there's all these other people around either having similar difficulties that I'm having, or they're doing all these beautiful things I'm not noticing. So we try to keep that in mind and just keep that those blinders off, so we know, yeah, we're also on a retreat with other people, and we're helping each other, we're looking after each other. So I think that in terms of beginning the retreat, you know, there are ways that we want to be pretty careful with ourselves and our own practice. There can be a tendency to hear some of the talks that we might give, and if any of them are about like really, well, I've mentioned a few times, but maybe sometimes it goes like killing the kalesas, and you know, you really go into battle, and we have to know what's right for ourselves, what we're doing. So sometimes people come up with like these things called determinations, aditana. And so they'll determine, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm only going to sleep 2 hours a night, and I'm going to sit in meditation for at least 15 hours a day. That's my minimum. And on these determinations can go. And they're very much like New Year's resolutions, because you kind of start them and then, like, I don't know, sometimes it's just a day and it's just, well, this is not possible. So just being aware of like what can we do gradually to encourage ourselves in this practice, encourage ourselves towards this retreat. One of the things in terms of making determinations is they're helpful if you can make things that you can actually do, not things that are extremely difficult for you to do, or even very difficult, or they're mostly things that you can kind of say like, yeah, I did an accomplishment today. I did something that I promised myself I would do. And that in and of itself is what's sort of helpful about it, is that you're doing something wholesome, but it's not necessarily like a complete change from who and what you are. You know, like if you've never, for example, meditated 15 hours a day, then that's not an appropriate determination. But then there's some things, sometimes we do things where we promise, I'm not going to talk for 3 months. And then that puts a burden on others, because there are some times you need to talk. This is, the Buddha called this right speech. He didn't call it no speech. So we need to know how to speak well, to speak in the right way, to speak in a harmonious way. And so there are appropriate times when you'll speak. Obviously, the retreat crew will be engaging in likely more speech than the monastics, and that's totally appropriate. I remember some people, they make a determination not to speak, so they're writing notes to everyone. And it's note after note, and here's a note. Pretty silly. But these are things that people can do, and they might kind of ideally make sense, but then when it's practiced, it can put a burden on oneself or another. So it's helpful to kind of look at like what we're promising ourselves, what we're trying to do, and to find those things that are kind of in the middle. Remember, this is the middle path. So things that are appropriate for us and helpful for us, and not going to be a burden on us or others. Once the 8th begins, January 8th, we'll be in a full practice period. And that will be different for most of us. We haven't done this in a while. And so just to kind of go easy on ourselves, and not in terms of like our expectations, not to have too high of expectations in terms of how we're going to be when we're engaging with many hours of meditation like this. And we're also doing it with others. So, you know, we're trying to be aware of how we are, again, that there are other people in the room. And in that way, you know, we're aware that this isn't just a singular feat for ourselves. We're encouraging each other by just continuing with that daily practice. And Ajñānakva said that'll be for a few weeks with readings in the evenings. So, yeah, this is a very special time. And I also want to encourage people to, and this is also very strong encouragement for myself, but that statement I made from Lumbor Sachito when there was some confusion as to when the retreat was starting, and just try to think about that for yourselves. You know, for some of us, the retreat has already begun, and for others, it never will. And just as a reflection, it's really nice to kind of sometimes bring that. Am I engaged in the retreat now, or am I getting distracted? Am I kind of losing myself in the old ways that I tend to, in terms of creating responsibilities or getting distracted with something? And so bringing that up is very useful because, again, this vipaka kamma will just keep arising. We'll keep seeing our own kamma, our own particular way that we've been in the past month, in the past year, you know, from this lifetime, from perhaps many lifetimes. And so we'll just keep working with that. But it's important to remind ourselves, okay, I don't need to take this personally. You know, sometimes we can get very frustrated with how things come up for us and that we lack the resources to work with them, and just to say, well, that's just where I am right now. I'm just starting where I am, which is just right now, right here. And that's the best we can do. So these are just a few words of encouragement. And I wish everyone the best over the next few months. I mean, I'll still be here. But yeah, it's a very beautiful time to be in the monastery. As most monastics will say, it's our favorite time. And yeah, there can be a lot of appreciation and joy for the retreat crew is here, or is looking after us in such a kind way. So we'll just continue with our schedule as usual. Again, tomorrow morning, there's no morning puja. We'll have 6:30 a.m. chores and just kind of a quieter schedule. I think Ajahn Janaka is going to try to come back for tea time tomorrow night. So I will end it there.